News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 at 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. What's going on?
Well, it's a Tuesday. That means we're set to talk with Quinn Hillier from the Washington Examiner and QuinnHillier.com. A reminder, later in this hour, we'll be giving away a pair of tickets to see the comedian Bert Kreischer at the Mobile Civic Center Arena coming up October 15th. So stay tuned and get that number handy. We'll be giving those away later in the hour. But Quinn, I think this is as good a time as any to discuss an athlete that passed away last week, and it comes during a year for the Baltimore Orioles where their best record in a very, very long time, and they're preparing to play in the playoffs here over the next few weeks. And Brooks Robinson, who was a legendary Orioles player, passed away, and you wrote up a little story about him this week.
Yeah, well, look, anybody who is as old as I am looks back at Brooks Robinson fondly, not just because he was almost surely the greatest defensive third baseman anybody has ever seen, and also a very good hitter and an excellent clutch hitter, but because he was just legendarily a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a class act through and through. But to watch the replays is even not to understand how good a player he was. I mean, it was stunning to see how he made unbelievable diving catches and throws look almost routine. They didn't look routine for anybody else. You knew how great it was, but you expected him to do the nearly impossible in the field every time. And then on top of that, here's a guy, grew up in Little Rock, graduated from Little Rock Central High School 2 years before the famous integration of the high school, where they had to have armed guards walking the little black children to class while people were spitting on them. And, you know, so he grew up in the very racist, segregated South, and somehow superseded those awful attitudes, because when Frank Robinson, the great, you know, future Hall of Famer, joined the Orioles, you know, you wouldn't think that the white guy from Little Rock would be the one to welcome him. But Brooks Robinson immediately said, "This is exactly the man we need," and they became absolute fast friends and were really a model for how people should behave around people in the other race. And he was a remarkable man, and so I read a little fun piece paying tribute to him.
Couple of things about Brooks Robinson. Number one, he was absolutely correct, because they got Frank Robinson in a deal from the National League, and then they went on to have great teams. I know they won the pennant several times. I guess they won at least one World Series.
Here's the deal: they won two World Series.
Okay,
they made five World Series.
Wow.
In 6 years. They won. They made four World Series in 6 years. They won two of those, and then in the next 3 years after that, they won two more division titles, and both times barely lost in the ALCS. So they were a virtual dynasty,
yeah.
And it was led by what they called, even though one was white, one was black, they started being referred to as the Robinson brothers.
Yep, and also I was a Yankee fan at the time as a kid, and I hated the Orioles, but I didn't hate Brooks Robinson for some reason. He just seemed like just a really good guy. And also,
I didn't like the Orioles either. Everybody that watched, you might not like Earl. You know, Earl Weaver was their feisty manager, and you might not like the Orioles. Everybody in America loved Brooks Robinson.
18 All-Star appearances. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
16 times.
Very well deserved.
Yeah, and also, and last one last thing on him before we move on. I know we want to talk about political items here, but he was a third baseman at the time that things were transitioning from grass and dirt to AstroTurf.
Mm.
And fielding a ball on AstroTurf was a lot
different.
The hot corner became very hot, and he had a World Series against the Cincinnati Reds. If you just YouTube the World Series against the Reds, Brooks Robinson, it was almost like he won the World Series single-handedly. He had so many great plays at third base. So anyway,
he had at least five astonishing good defensive plays. Mm-hmm. He also hit .429 in the series with two home runs and two doubles it was either five or six games.
Wow!
So just out of this world play. Everybody just knows it as the Brooks Robinson series.
Yeah, wow. Pretty cool.
What a career. You can read that at WashingtonExaminer.com.
Very nice, Quinn.
Quinn, let's talk about the debate from last week, second debate for the Republican primary for their presidential candidate. And the thing that probably stood out to most people was the talking over one another and trying to get digs in on each other. And you're saying something that I think we've all noticed at this point, that most of these debates have turned into disasters. And you say it's time to fix them.
Time to fix them. And look, I'm not original in coming up with the way to fix it. I mean, you go on Twitter after every single debate, and every single debate says, why don't they shut off the microphone? Well, it should be easier than that. The only microphone that should be on are those of the moderator and the person whose turn it is to talk. You look back at the great old debates between Reagan and Carter, Reagan and Mondale, even Bush and Dukakis, and you had one person talk, and the other person waited his turn, and then he talked. Well, the way to fix it is to have a person to whom the question is directed, and none of the other mics of the other candidates are even on. And you have a set time limit. I say 3 minutes. It could be 2.5. You have a set time limit where that person gets to talk. And 15 seconds before his time is up, he gets a warning that it's up. And at the 3-minute mark or whatever the time limit is, his microphone goes off. You set it automatically. You push the button to start it, and 3 minutes later, it turns off. And then you ask one question. Everybody on stage gets to answer it. Then you get another question, and everybody on stage gets to answer it. And you don't have people interrupt. You don't have people yelling at each other. And you actually get give the viewing audience a chance to listen. It's that simple.
You know, I guess the way, so when Dalton and I were texting each other during that debate, and I was not very entertained by the whole format. It just seemed so chaotic, right? And I guess what happens is, when you think about it, when somebody begins answering their question or a question, they'll bring up one of the other candidates. So they'll throw a slight at them, and the other candidate now feels like he's got to respond in time. And that's where all this devolves, I guess. It just was just a mess to watch, and I didn't learn a whole lot the whole night.
Right. And look, sometime about 10 or 12 years ago, maybe 16, for entertainment purposes, they decided that if your name is mentioned, then you get an extra, 30 seconds to answer, and then they started, not really policing interruptions. It's gone way too far. This is not supposed to be for entertainment. I don't care how big the friggin' audience is. If people want to go see a cage match, if they want to see the political equivalent of worldwide wrestling, tough. The debates should not be that. The debates should be for the public to learn what the candidates' views are, what their record is, and why they think they should be able or will be able to put those views into practice.
Yeah.
Period. End of question. And nobody's microphone should be on except the person whose turn it is.
That's what you think, Quinn. But I have a feeling that Fox News, Fox Business, maybe feel a little differently. They do care about how many eyes are on there, and I think it is to the detriment of the American voter. This might be one of those things, and you took it exactly where I was going to. You went WWE. I was going to say boxing match or UFC fight, where for the most part, all the viewers of these, they're like, man, I wish this wouldn't get so personal. I wish these fighters weren't making personal attacks at each other going in. But we all know that leads to bigger viewership numbers, and I think Fox and these different companies. I mean, is it? Do you think that this drama and this yelling at each other is as hard as it is to watch on TV, that it actually does give them better numbers?
Well, I think 10, 12, 16 years ago, you read people said, oh, these debates are so, they're so boring, and you know, everybody has a canned 90-second answer, and let's liven it up a little. Well, now it's gone the other way, and I know lots and lots of people who are no longer watching the debates or who turn it off after 10 minutes because it has turned into such a cage match. So I think they're actually misjudging their audience. But look, it doesn't have to be a yelling match for it to be entertaining. If you go back and look at Reagan and Mondale, it's good stuff. And, you know, you've got the famous Reagan line where he said, I won't use my opponent's youth and inexperience against him.
That was funny.
And there's Mondale chuckling in the background because he realizes that it's funny and he's an actually decent guy, even though he was wrong on all the issues. And the audience watching can realize that it was a really clever, good line. And it was entertaining. I watched it live. I know it was. You don't need to have people be able to yell over each other.
And it is so painful ever since that Reagan line, watching some of these candidates try to deliver their own.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it just falls so flat. It's like, oh, why did you even try that?
That is so true.
Quinn, do you think, you said give everyone about the same amount of time, turn only their microphone on. I'm interested, do you think that, in a debate like this, eight candidates up there on stage, should Doug Burgum get as much time as DeSantis and Nikki Haley, or do you think it should be weighted heavier towards the candidates who have higher numbers?
I think it's obscene to weight it to the candidates that have higher numbers. If you qualify for the debate, now you can argue about what the level is for qualifying for the debate. That's a different argument. But if you qualify for the debate, if you pass muster to get on there, like unlike some other candidates who don't, you should have every right to equal time, because the whole point is for the audience to get to see it. And, you know, some of these lesser known candidates might actually have something worthwhile to say and might actually make good general election candidates if they only got a chance.
Yeah, so, that's a good point, Corn. That's a good point. Yeah, the underdogs can have good ideas, too.
I'm so sick of everybody saying, oh, you know, DeSantis is leading in the polls among the non-Trump candidates, therefore, why don't they give DeSantis more time? Uh-uh. He might be leading in the polls, but that's a matter of name ID or whatever. The whole point is to make it fair.
Yeah, the word debate, when I was growing up, almost it seemed to have like a dignity about it, like a debate that's
exactly.
You know, like a statesman. Okay, Quinn, we've got a number of things to hit, and we'll do that on the way next on Mobile Morning.
Welcome back to Mobile Mornings. This segment brought to you by the local personal injury attorneys at Tobias and Comer Law. Had a great conversation with Desi Tobias yesterday about teen-safe driving tips coming up later this month. I believe October 15th is when Teen Safe Driving Week begins. And, of course, a lot of parents out there worried once their teens get on the road, traffic crashes are the leading cause of death in teens that are 15 to 18 years old. And at Tobias and Comer Law, they have plenty of great resources at their website. But one of those is some teen safe driving tips, so you can make sure that your teen knows the rules of the road and the best way to be safe once they do hit the road. At Tobias and Comer Law, they are experienced personal injury lawyers, and they've been serving Mobile and the surrounding areas with compassion and a track record of success for decades. They work each client's case personally from start to finish. They don't hand your case over to another lawyer you don't know at some other law firm. So call them. It's a free consultation at any time of the day, 251-432-5001. And, of course, check out that great website, TobiasComerLaw.com. Also, that podcast from my discussion with Desi Tobias up on our Facebook page and our website, fmtalk1065.com.
Dianne Feinstein passes away late last week. And Quinn, I know I'm reading an article that you wrote in the Washington Examiner about you're not real pleased with the media coverage on this.
No, look, I'm not going to say anything bad about Dianne Feinstein in the week after she died. I didn't agree with her. That's fine. My piece was about how bad the media was. If you said to anybody that paid attention to politics for, you know, 25 years, you know, where does Dianne Feinstein rank on the political spectrum? Every sentient human being would have said, oh, yeah, she's, you know, she's very liberal. They might not say she's radical. Let's say she's very liberal. The Associated Press, the New York Times, and the Washington Post all very prominently labeled her a centrist. One of them even put in their headline, called her centrist stalwart. Now, if she is centrist, then Lord knows, then what is Stalin's, you know, you got to go as far left as Stalin to be a liberal. I mean, this is insane, and I noted that there are all sorts of interest group ratings, and so you can, you know, there's an objective way to say whether somebody's centrist, liberal, far left, you know, conservative, whatever. And the media is just lying, because what they want to do is they want to move the needle so that what is very liberal gets treated as if it's center, so that what is absolutely radical is only liberal. And that means everybody, even in the actual center or to the right, is labeled as a knuckle-dragging Neanderthal or Nazi.
Yep.
That's what they're trying to do, and it's lies, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah, you mentioned the Washington Post headline, centrist stalwart. New York Times said Feinstein called herself a political centrist and often embraced conservative ideas. NBC News, a centrist Democrat known for trying to find common ground with Republicans. And the Daily Beast, Feinstein steeped in centrist policies that no longer fit the times. That's absolutely insane. On a separate note, I want to get your take on Feinstein somehow finding a way to vote the day before she passed away and was even tweeting about her policies. We all know that it wasn't Feinstein likely doing any of that. What do you make of her age and her ability to get the job done at that time? I mean, this is a bigger deal than just Feinstein. Go through how many senators we've had over the years who don't seem to be able to do their job anymore.
Well, look, you know, that's a matter for, I mean, you know, a lot of senators have sort of died in office. But what worries me is how she cast a vote. I doubt that she was actually there in person on the floor casting a vote, which means that you had some hanky-panky going on where the Schumer was doing a wink and a nod and letting Chris Stafford's vote for her, and that's illegal. But, you know, that's a matter for another day.
Quinn, let everybody know where they can get your stuff.
Just Google Quinn Hillier and Washington Examiner, or subscribe for free at quinnhillier.com.
We appreciate your articles.
Thanks.
Thanks for your tribute to Brooks Robinson. It was really nice. And somehow there's a generation that doesn't know much about Brooks Robinson. They really should. Thanks, Quinn. We'll talk in a week, okay?
Okay.
All right, there you go. Quinn Hillier, Washington Examiner, and Mobile Mornings continues right after this on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks, Kane. 835 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings.
Thanks, Kane.
Hey, it's that time where you can win a pair of tickets. I was just showing Dan some of the hilarity of the comedian Bert Kreischer.
Yeah, I don't know how I've missed this guy, but during the pandemic, I watched every comedy special known to man.
And you missed him.
I missed him.
Love this dude. And he's coming to our fair city, Mobile, Sunday, October 15th at the Mobile Civic Center Arena. Bert Kreischer in the Tops Off World Tour. We have a pair of tickets for you to caller number 5 right now at 251-343-0106. Pair of tickets to see Bert Kreischer, Mobile Civic Center Arena. Again, that's Sunday, October 15th, a 7 p.m. show. And caller number 5 at 251-343-0106 will have a pair of tickets. And hopefully I'll see you there, because I plan to be out there at that show. And it'll be awesome.
Did you know that the big news of the day, somehow, is toilet paper?
Really? I was going through a neighborhood, a back road to get to my neighborhood earlier this week, and I saw somebody had rolled a house. It's the only toilet paper I've seen it's not, rolling a house recently.
It's about toilet paper, actually, right there by your toilet.
Oh, okay.
So the CEO of Charmin.
The bear that's in the commercials.
He's just a bear in the commercials. He's not the CEO.
Okay.
I didn't know I'd have to explain that. But anyway, there is this new Charmin. They have reinvented the square for the first time in 100 years, and they're very excited about it. And so can I tell you more about this story?
Please do.
He was on Fox. He's been everywhere. Rob Reinerman saying, this is really breaking up the whole...
They've revolutionized
toilet paper as we've known it for years. The mega brand announced yesterday the ultra-soft rolls of toilet paper have a new perforation line.
Okay. That would be where they tear.
Yep. The easy tear paper will have scalloped edges in an effort to give consumers a simple and smoother tear, according to the chairman. And this is, it's big news. He said, we're very excited about the launch of Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear today because this is an innovation that the toilet paper category has never seen. He's talking about it like it's somebody built a pyramid in his yard. He said the idea came from customers who we have been having a hard time getting a clean tear when using the toilet paper. Senior scientist,
toilet paper scientist
at Procter & Gamble, Greg Weaver, said in a media statement that users' top complaint for years has been the inability to get that even tear.
Oh, my goodness.
I never really complained about that.
Didn't realize.
I never came out of the bathroom saying, I just can't get the tear right. The uneven tear is a result of straight perforations that don't match the direction that the customers pull sheets and where the toilet paper is hung in the bathroom. It became very scientific, obviously. Reinerman said that the new addition aims to give toilet paper users a clean tear every single time.
Can every you imagine time. That? Like 100%.
100%. This is our first time in more than 100 years that we have reinvented the square, and we cannot wait for our customers to get their hands on it.
That is ridiculous.
Chairman, Ultra Soft Smooth Tear, Charmin, I should say, Ultra Soft Smooth Tear is available nationwide.
Oh, good.
I don't know if it's available yet, but he was been on the shows, and I was just like, is that that big a deal? Well, the interviewers are treating it like a big deal. They're saying that the public has been...
Do you think there will be people like camping outside of these stores waiting for that first batch of the new Charmin to come
in? Let's go to the text line. You tell us. 251-343-0106. Was the uneven tear in your toilet experience something that really got on your
nerves? Did it upset your home life?
Yeah.
The uneven tear.
Yeah.
And you know that the toilet paper message boards right now are just on fire online.
I've never been to one.
Forums.
For a million reasons, I've never been to one.
Now, coming into this segment, I've never even thought that maybe I would have any issues with any kind of toilet paper, except for the one time so far where my children have completely loaded the bowl with like an entire roll.
That's what they do.
Off.
Yeah.
But I do have one gripe with toilet paper.
Okay.
And I don't know, it doesn't sound like this is something that Charmin has fixed with this new tear. And that's when you get a new roll and you're trying to crack the seal that first time on the new roll. And if you don't go the right way, or maybe I'm just doing it the wrong way, you end up tearing a good two or three layers in.
Yeah, it's bad.
And then you're just trying to it right.
You're playing catch up at that point. The same can be done with an onion. I completely tore up. I completely destroyed some Glad cling paper or whatever, cling wrap.
Okay. For the food. Yeah.
Yeah. I opened it up, and you got the teeth on one side, so it's supposed to come over the teeth, and somehow, some way, opening all that up, it's destroyed.
Oh, I've
destroyed it.
I'm the absolute worst at that. Yeah, whether it's the cling wrap or aluminum foil, I don't know the last time that I got
a
really good aluminum foil tear. Mm-hmm. I always end up leaving parts of aluminum foil around. It's not a good look.
And the aluminum foil, I like to go I don't like to get like the brand from the store. It's got to be Reynolds wrap, right? And I like to go with the 500 yards of it or something like that. So you, you can get aluminum foil in something that you have to power lift off the shelf. That's my jam right there.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah. I'll write that down. We do have the holidays on the way. So guess what you're going to be getting for Christmas.
So by the way, just on the text line, is it a big deal? Do you share the enthusiasm of the president of Procter & Gamble, or whoever this guy is, rolling out, no pun intended, the new toilet paper today?
Jolene texting in, and excited to hear from Jolene. I think we have some exciting news on the way for fans of Jolene Roxbury. But said Gorilla Glue and Charmin merged together for that new roll seal. So maybe we have like a merger meeting of the minds here, where companies are now working together in order to make a better toilet paper roll.
Top scientists from both camps working together. Isn't that beautiful?
That's great.
And by the way, we will see. I'll get this stuff, and we'll see if they.
You're going to give a review?
I will give a review.
Oh my God.
And the first part of the review will be what you were talking about, the initial tear, the seal there. I'll see if they've improved that aspect.
That should be the first thing on their list.
Yep.
So. This fire alarm thing, you would have thought that this would be over after this weekend when Representative Jamal Bowman pulled the fire alarm. He said he was panicked, just trying to make it out the door so he could get in for this vote for the continuing resolution to keep the government funded for the next month. And a lot has happened since then. You've got Republicans going after him for delaying a congressional, I forget the exact term, but this could very well have been a criminal charge. I mean, it's not a good thing to pull a fire alarm just so that you can, what likely was happening, he was trying to delay the vote, but he's saying he was trying to get to the vote in time. Either way, absolutely ridiculous. Yesterday, Jamal Bowman was talking a bit more about the big fire alarm scandal from the weekend.
I don't know why this has gotten so much attention. I was literally just in a rush to go vote, man. And I take responsibility for what I did, you know, but like I said, I was in a rush to go vote.
Yeah, apparently his staff, or he's blaming it on his staff, but he put out like this press release where he went on the offensive against these Republicans who were saying that it was entirely ridiculous that he would pull the fire alarm in that manner. And he actually called the Republicans Nazis. For their take on him pulling the fire alarm.
Well, look here. Alabama code 1975 13A 10-8, rendering a false fire alarm. Mm-hmm. A person commits the crime of rendering a false alarm if he or she knowingly causes a false alarm or of fire or other emergency involving danger to person or property to be transmitted to or within an official volunteer fire department or any governmental agency. Well, that's what he was in a governmental agency,
yeah,
for sure, and he pulled the fire alarm. That is against the law.
And also kind of ironic, you know, the first argument that liberals go to when it comes to First Amendment rights, they'll say, well, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater, mm-hmm. right? That doesn't count in your First Amendment rights, but that's more or less what he did here.
Yeah.
He pulled the fire alarm in a crowded Congress. So AOC, you know, this Jamal Bowman, he is a member of the squad, although maybe less heralded than the four women of the squad. But AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, standing up for her friend over the weekend, and I think she's referencing the Republican George Santos here as she makes her defense.
They are protecting someone who has lied to the American people, lied to the United States House of Representatives, lied to congressional investigators, but they're filing a motion to expel a member who, in a moment of panic, was trying to escape a vestibule. Give me a break.
It's just the ridiculousness of this entire thing.
That this conversation still going on is bizarre.
A fellow New Yorker, though, but not Democrat, a Republican here, is going after Bowman, and I think at the very least, not just censured, she wants Bowman expelled from Congress. And you know, I'm kind of in line with what you've heard Jeff Poor say over the last few months regarding the Santos thing, or mm-hmm. you know, name your elected politician who's in a scandal. I think it should be decided at the ballot box, not necessarily by Congress. There's only been 5 members of the House of Representatives ever expelled.
Really?
Yeah, for something that they've done in office, expelled by the
that
And there have been a lot of bad people that have been in Congress. But here's Nicole Malliotakis, who's calling for Bowman's expulsion. And she references something we discussed yesterday, and that's that he was actually the principal of a high school in New York where the first punishment for pulling a fire alarm was immediate 10-day suspension, and that these students could be expelled from his high school. Here's Nicole Malliotakis.
Of all people, Jamal Bowman knows the old fire alarm trick because he was a high school principal. And quite frankly, when he was the high school principal, there were serious ramifications if a student were to do that, and including expulsion.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's on the text line. I agree completely. I just wanted to fill everyone in on this, that there are much bigger matters at hand right now. But when you see Democrats go after Republicans for far less greater offenses than this, pulling a fire alarm when there's no fire.
Yeah. And then again, I made this point yesterday when you told me he'd been a principal at a high school. Who would be more familiar with the operation of a fire alarm
than
a principal at a high school? Because it's probably one of the biggest pains in the neck that they deal with whenever they have got to deal with it. Figuring out, is this, do we all need to go line up in the parking lot, or is this just somebody just messing around?
Absolutely insane. Pete says, what a liar, and he challenges anyone calling him on the lie. If he was a Trump supporter, they would already be erecting the gallows. Yeah, you can imagine the think pieces put out by the media if that were, oh, I don't know, James Comer, who decided to pull the fire alarm. Chris says, big fan of Charmin. Says, Charmin is my jam, but I don't care how it tears. You know, Chris, I don't think anyone actually cares how it tears. Obviously a big media play from that bear CEO of Charmin, trying to get them. This texter says, bigger problem. We got a lot of toilet paper texts coming in today.
Good.
Bigger problem. Public restroom, the paper rolls front to back instead of out across your feet. Oh, are we starting that debate again? Which side of the roll the toilet paper should roll from? Looks like that debate has begun on the
goes over
line.
Like Niagara Falls.
And Lloyd says, y'all have clearly run out of things to say with the toilet paper conversation.
Well, I guess guilty.
Guilty as charged. Guilty as Charmin.
I just thought it was amazing that, I mean, this was on Fox News, Fox Digital. It played up like a big deal, and then when I was reading the story, it's like, what am I about to uncover here? And it was nothing.
Yeah, I think that story led on Bret Baier last night, also ABC News and Fox News. Everybody talking about the new Charmin rolls.
There you go. We've all run out of things to talk about, it looks like. 8:49, Dan and Dalton, we will preview Jeff's show on the way. FM Talk 106.5, about 8:54 now. Bill says that his wife got the new toilet paper last week, so how did he get it? That's ahead of the announcement.
Yeah, he must be
a preferred customer?
Preferred customer of Charmin, getting the early edition of the Easy Tear.
My wife bought some of the new TP with this, and we'll be done with this in just a moment, with the scalloped perforation last week. It's all right. That's his review is it's all right.
Maybe I'm not very smart. I'm having trouble picturing what a scalloped perforation is. It's going completely over my head. I have no idea what that even means.
I think I know what it means, but I don't want to sound stupid on the air. By the way, Jeff Poore has got Alabama GOP Chairman John Wall on the first hour of today's show. Also, State Representative Brett Easterbrook and former U.S. Rep. Parker Griffith. Always like to hear Parker, the Democrat, response to the Jeff Poore Show, 11:35 this morning.
Congratulations, Jake, picking up a pair of tickets to see Bert Kreischer at the Mobile Civic Center. That show coming up on October 15th, a Sunday, the Tops Off World Tour. Jake will be there. I'll be there. Several other winners already from the last 3 days of broadcasts. And stay tuned for the rest of the week. We'll be giving away a pair of tickets every single day through Friday, so you'll want to listen if you want your chance to win to go see Bert Kreischer. All of this conversation about the budget for the federal government, where the money's going to go, why we're spending so much money in Ukraine when we have our own issues here at home, and then this story comes up, and I would love to hear from some of our veterans, some of the members of the military who listen to us on the morning show, whether this is being blown out of proportion or whether this is actually a big deal. There's apparently a camouflage shortage in the Marine Corps, and according to reports, it will lead to service members wearing less regulated uniforms in the near future. The new commandant, General Eric Smith, in an Instagram video, addressed service members' concerns over an inability to find and purchase woodland-patterned camis and an ongoing manufacturing shortage. He said that as the problem continues, local members will be allowed to wear alternate uniforms contrary to Marine standards. Smith, Commandant Smith, Commandant General Smith said, that problem is going to stay with us until the fall of 2024 when the manufacturer can fill the backlog that has been created after COVID. Until that time, local commanders, battalions, and squadrons are authorized to use frog gear or desert-colored camis to mitigate. It's just, you think of the hundreds of billions of dollars that are being spent, sent elsewhere, and apparently we have a camo backlog here in America that won't be filled until fall of next year. They're a year behind in making the woodland camos for the Marines.
So if you have this camouflage backlog or shortage, when and who decides, you know what, let's tell everybody about this?
Well,
it's a little bit like the Charmin thing. It's like, did we really need to know? But the military decided that this was newsworthy, if by letting everybody know, does it help solve the problem?
Well, I guess.
Or does it just look like a bigger embarrassment?
It was basically a call from on high to all the Marines that, hey, it's okay if you want to wear the desert camo or the frog gear until we figure out this camo situation.
Could that have just been more of an internal memo?
I think it probably could have been. Okay. Unless they were trying to get the message out there that there needs to be an act of Congress to fix the camo situation. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
A literal act of Congress.
A literal act of Congress. Commandant General Eric Smith added, what we cannot have is a situation where a Marine is wearing unserviceable camis because that looks bad for the Corps, and we can't have a situation where that Marine is being given a hard time about those unserviceable camis. We're going to get this fixed, but it's going to take a little patience. Is there anything that's, and like I said, let me know on the text line, maybe this isn't a big deal at all, but it's almost embarrassing, right?
That's what I'm saying, is why did you have to make this announcement? David says, can the Marines go down to the towards the Army-Navy store or Bass Pro and get what they need? I guess, I
was wondering if maybe some of the hunters would put together
a little gift basket
for the Marines.
Yeah.
You know who's probably got a great take on this is our resident Marine, Tom Claxton, who will be on board the battleship with me tomorrow afternoon for Midday Mobile. His scuttlebutt will be on at 1 o'clock. I'm going to get his take on this.
Sure.
See what he thinks.
I'll be listening. 8:59, Jeff Poore on the way. Mobile Mornings. See you tomorrow beginning at 6 o'clock.